we have worked so hard at our relationship.
Can we see that?
Yeah, we're always working on it. So to make it what it is, because it's everything.
You were saying before, Jane, just coming back to what you were saying earlier about like when there's conflict in your relationship, that you talk about it.
Yeah.
But clearly you must have built that as like a way, like a method of being from Sinead being young.
Yeah, psychologist Dorothy Rose says that you either become a reaction to your mother or a version of her.
I need her more now. Yeah. In a different way, but I need her, definitely. Don't get emotional, but... Just even with dealing with my mental space and decision-making, I didn't like school. I like playing, I like having fun. So just that commitment to I must learn and keep learning. I see you do that, and I think I've taken that.
Welcome to the Magnified Conversations. My name's Rachel, and I'll be your host today. As a team, we have been thrilled to put out this content on relationships, money, career, and faith. And we know it's been a real benefit to our community so far. So if you're new here, welcome. The best thing you can do is subscribe to this YouTube channel so more women can benefit from all of this wisdom and value-adding content. But without further ado, let's get into this conversation. Ladies, thank you so much for being here. We're so excited for this mother and daughter episode.
It's a joy.
I'm so excited to get into it. I'm going to talk about a little bit about the complexities of the relationships between a mother and a daughter and the joys and sometimes the pain as well. But before we get into it, it'd be good to just know both of your names, have a headline of who you are as well. Starting with you, Jane.
So I'm Jane Banfull. I'm an integrative psychotherapist and life coach. And I co-pastor the church with my husband as well.
Amazing.
And my PEEP project is the work I'm doing in Rwanda, building a counselling service there. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So. I'm Sinead Minka, no longer a Bountiful. And I am a pastor in my parents' church as well for the young adults. I'm a lawyer. Employment lawyer, actually, to be specific. And I also run an online Bible study called The Preacher's Daughter, and it's on various social media platforms. So, yes.
Amazing. Well, we're going to start with a little icebreaker.
Yeah, okay.
And we're going to do who's more likely to, right?
Ooh,
so really? How it works, I'll say a sentence or I'll ask a question,
yeah.
And you have to point at who's more likely to. So it's either yourself or the person sat next to you, right?
Okay.
And then we can discuss it if we need to. You know, we can. Okay. I know you're the therapist here, Jane, but if I need to intervene as a therapist for a time, we can do it. So who's the best cook?
I'm going to say it anyway.
We know
so
it. Right.
Yeah, catch enough.
Thanks.
Yeah, you are the best cook.
Yeah.
Who's more likely to cry during a film?
Me. Oh, yeah.
You know each other well so far. Who gives the best advice?
I love
yourself assurance, Jane. I'm here for it. Who's got the best sense of humour?
I'm hilarious, Mom. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, yeah. All right. You're funny, though.
Mine wasn't allowed to come out. I was born in the 60s. Okay. Are you kidding me?
Right. So it's in there.
Yeah.
It's in there.
It's coming out.
Who's more spontaneous?
I think you are.
I think I am.
She has a tattoo of, like, when I was 15, I woke up, she came in with this, like, cling film. I was like, what are you doing? She's like, I got a tattoo. I was like, you did what? She's like, I got a tattoo. And she had my dad's name, like a massive tattoo of my dad's name on her arm. And I thought, oh gosh, like, here we go.
Were you allowed a tattoo at the time?
I wasn't interested. I don't like pain. I can't take the pain. But she loves it. So,
Who has the better wardrobe?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
God, you're winning on all of these. Yeah. Who's more competitive?
You're very competitive.
So are you.
Okay.
Where does the competitiveness come out
it's
generally?
It's from her, though.
It's but, like, in what sort of a situation is it? Like, you're playing sport or it's a game or it's...
Yeah, I take, like, every game tonight. I do so seriously.
Yeah, you do.
And so I'm games master because if I'm in a team, I can't participate. like in a safe space. Like, it's not safe.
Why? Because your teammates are not safe.
Yeah, and then if they're not good, like, I'm going to get rid of them.
I mean, I agree with you on that. Unless they've got the same level of commitment to the game that I have, which is why I love team sport. And I'm like, if everybody wants to win, great. If not, it's like,
don't play.
Okay, and then to end on a bit of a, well, not that they weren't positive, but to end on a positive, and what's your favourite memory together?
There's so many.
I think for me, it's your wedding.
Okay.
It was just so special. Oh. Yeah. She used to say when she was a little girl, oh, mummy, daddy, can I live with you forever?
Oh.
And
you'd be like, no.
Yeah, we said no. And then Ben came and...
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Daddy cried, I cried. It was so special.
Yeah.
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 It still is every time I think about it.
Yeah, I think it was the whole process of it. I think one big thing was you went away with Ben to find the venue and I didn't know. Mm. And I think it's just the fact that he could have that relationship with you meant a lot to me. So, yeah, that was good.
So beautiful.
Getting emotional already.
You're going to cry already?
Yeah. I love a cry, though.
So. Come on, we already know that. From the icebreaker. Yeah, it's so good. So we're going to be talking about your, in particular, your relationship with each other. But and we'll start with you, Sinead. Why is it important that we're having this conversation for you today?
Oh, I think relationships are really important. That's what I've been raised to know, that they're like your biggest currency. And I think... sometimes people value a lot of material things and it's really when times are hard in your life, it's your family, like your core people that are put in your life for those moments and even good moments. And I think as I've got older, I've realised the value of relationships, just even being able to share good news with people and just navigating my adulthood has been really important with my mum, just calling her and saying, you know, oh, I don't know how to do this. I've never been a wife before. I've never been in my 30s before. Like, just having someone that's gone ahead of you that you trust is so important. And that's been our relationship, you know. So, yeah, that's I think why I think it's important. Yeah.
About you, Jane?
Yeah.
I think whenever you become a mother, your own mothering relationship kicks in. And my mother didn't have certain things that I know and do. But every time I have good news, like even Sinead getting married or Siobhan becoming a mother or anything, I think of my mother. And my daughters, both Sinead and I and Siobhan, we have worked so hard at our relationship.
We're
always working on it. Yeah, so to make it what it is, because it's everything. It's like this bank account. When you make deposits into your finances, you can make withdrawals. It's the same with your relationships. You know, you can then make withdrawals all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when times are hard, you know that you can withdraw from this relationship because you have invested into it.
So I'd just love to hear about just your relationship. What's it like? Like, give us a bit of a whistle stop tour. I don't even know how to phrase the question properly, but like, I'm just watching you interact. Like, I'm picking up on it a little bit, but have things always been like really harmonious? Has there been a time where you've been particularly close to each other or times where you've been particularly distant? And like, what was the reason for that?
I think we've always been close. And because of that, when there's conflict, we agonize to solve it because we've had this closeness for a long time. So whenever there's conflict, we are both very emotional. Yes, you are. We are both emotional, and we're all dramatic in this family, but really we're not dramatic. We're emotional, and so. We want to maintain and work on the relationship. You know, my siblings call me my mother's name now.
Okay.
But it's the part of her character that I like. She was peace loving and kind. It's not the other side of her when she was disciplining us. And so I think I got that from my own mother as well, which is in everything, just try and find the peace if you can, you know. And she was that glue in her own amongst her siblings and her relationship with me. And so I think we try and do the same. But when we had conflict, we talk about it.
We talk a lot. I think we have a lot of family meetings.
Yes.
Which is encouraged. Yeah. Like, it was nice to have a forum where everyone gets to say. They used to say they told us to talk too much because we debate and things like that. And I think because of our background, like, the culturally, people don't expect that in a Ghanaian home.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very different experience I was having from sometimes from other people. They say, oh, you told your dad how you feel, like, about this and that. And I was given that space. But I think you always listen to me, and then you always let me feel the emotion and find a way through it. So you never said, like, if I say I failed an exam or something, like, I went through a lot of challenges with my career, you'd still let me have that emotion and then say, okay, now what does that what can we do? You know, not live from that emotion, but it was a really, like, good process that you would take me through. You wouldn't over-therapize me or anything like that, but...
No, I don't do therapy with you.
Yeah, well, it's debatable, but... but, you know, it's just, yeah, I could see that the skill... You're passing on a lot of skills to me. And to be honest, since the last few years, we've been very close. We've always been close, though. Like, I embody her a lot. It's quite scary, actually.
Right.
I use a lot of bleach in my home, and I clean and clean and clean. And I used to think, well, she got so much bleach in this house when I was growing up. And, like, now all I do is, like, bleach and clean things. So you really become... I heard, I think, Senri Cloud say, you don't do what your parents tell you to do. You do what you see they do. Yeah. And I do. I literally feel like I'll be doing something and I feel myself... I'm just like her. I'm doing what she did. Even with hosting people, she hosts a lot of people in her home and things like that. And I have the same passion. So I think it's just embodying each other, seeing how you've done things.
Yeah. Psychologist Dorothy Rose says that you either become a reaction to your mother or a version of her.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so
that's so powerful. Yeah.
Can you talk a bit more about that, Jane? Like, what does that mean to you then?
Yeah.
Because when what I saw in my mother, my mother was divorced and remarried twice, but she was never negative about men and about relationships. She was empathetic, and I really like that. And she didn't have about hugging children, but we knew we were loved.
Yeah.
When my mother passed away, we all said that I am her favorite. And then my brother said, I am her favorite, because she let everyone feel like they were the favorite. And so I wanted to embody those parts, the parts that I didn't know on my faith journey. And it's quite simple. I actually even didn't know there was a prayer like that. But I said, God, please help me to be a hugging mother. Because, you know, and Sinead said to me when she was small, oh, mommy, if you say people in Ghana don't hug, how did you learn to be a hugging mother? And I said, I asked Jesus to help me.
Yeah.
And every day he's helping me. So I wanted to embody what I saw, the parts of my mother that I admired.
Celebrate.
You know, and so I work hard in my relationship with Sinead and with Siobhan in talking, in repair, in responsibility.
You apologize a lot, actually, as well.
I learned to do that. I apologize. I take responsibility. I'm not sanctimonious. You're trying to sound sanctimonious, but relationships are so important, and it can be fraught with pain. And so pastoring and also doing therapy with people, people bring to you pain. And so I've been a recipient of pain in my own life, on my own journey. And so we work hard at this relationship and we keep working on it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to get to a place where you think, oh, we have a good relationship and take each other for granted.
And has that always been intentional for you, James? You know, you were saying about being a hugging mother. I love that. And just embodying the things from your mom that were really healthy and special to you, like becoming a, you know, you're saying about becoming a version of your mom rather than a reaction to maybe the things that weren't as healthy. Has that been really intentional for you with the girls from when they were really young?
From when they were very young. I mean, part of my own story was that my mother encouraged my giftings, but when I went through a phase of being bullied at school, I went to boarding school in Ghana, was bullied. This is the part of my story that I think is my profession. And I was bullied for 2 years severely. And when I told my mother and she came to the school, the headmistress said to her, oh, it's she's fine. And my mother didn't do anything. But I had to forgive and heal that part of our relationship. Mm. So when the girls were young, from the age of 2 and 3, every morning, I let them have a declaration that they would say,
right.
I thought you're going to be confident.
Yeah.
Mm. And bullying, when bullying comes your way, you're going to look it in the face and said, no, I'm not taking this.
Right.
So that part of my mother that she didn't give to me, I became intentional
in
giving the girls this declaration. They said it every day when they were
Do
young.
Do you remember it, Sinead?
Yes. Her name is... My name is Sinead. I have lots of confidence and no one can take it away from me because Jesus gave it to me.
So what are you going to do today?
Shine.
And then we say shine.
I'm getting emotional, honestly.
Yeah,
so, I know this is...
Yeah.
I think that's so powerful.
It's just like an automatic trigger, like shine.
Yeah, the intentionality on your behalf, though, Jane, to just be like, do you know what? I could be bitter, so I'm a crier too.
Yeah, of course.
You could be bitter about everything, you know, that aspect of your mum's personality that you found difficult, but you've taken it and used it as a positive. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. What kind of an impact did that have on you and your sister then, Sinead, like at school? Through whether you were bullied or not, I think just that... That like sense of I'm confident. What am I going to do today?
I did read a script today about slapping people. Actually, I know, but I think I was always told that no one can take away your confidence because God. So even if I didn't understand the concept of God, I was like, there's no human that can take it from me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I remember just going through school and they like just say things like, "Oh, you're creative." You're not academic. Like, it's like insinuating things. I'd be like, but I'm shining. Like, I'm shouting. Yeah. So it was just a louder voice than all the other voices in school. And it was, I mean, it really helped because it was a school where, like, we were the only, like, black kids in our school.
Right.
At the time, again, they didn't really, like, bring that up at home. We didn't really talk about it. They just said, you know, be confident. Mm. Like, but it, and now looking back, it was really important because... Just being able to just look at yourself as an individual, not compare yourself, which so many young people, like we work with young people a lot, struggle with comparison. Yeah. I didn't have that like challenge. I suppose it's just more the leadership aspect.
Yeah.
That from a young age, you're a leader. And I'd be like to my dad, I don't want to be popular. And he'd be like, no. Like, all your friends will leave you. He said once, he was like, friends are a bonus. What did he say? I can't remember. I said to him, I'm so popular.
And
everyone loves me. And he was like, well, Jesus said, woe is he that has many friends. And I just thought, oh, what kind of like, get out of here. Like, I stalled out of the kitchen. But there's always that reminder that you came into this world alone. Mm. You're an individual. Mm. So you have to, you know, just forge that path and be a leader. It was challenging at times, especially with your peers. But they always reinforced it.
Mm.
So that was helpful because you go home, then you're reinforced as to why you're the way you are.
Yeah.
If people say you're different, your parents would tell you, my parents would tell me why.
Yeah.
So that helped me a lot.
So important. And what are some of like the other values, Jane, that for the kids that you really tried to instill into them?
I mean, that declarations was one of them. Mm. And then the other one was also about really being yourself and having that integrity. Because I remember once, because Sinead wanted to be popular, her father sat her down one day and said to her, people are not everybody in the world is not going to like you, Sinead. And she said, well, why won't anybody not like me? I'm nice, daddy. You know, but the reality of that. So I didn't want her or Siobhan to feel that the world is great.
Mm-hmm.
The world has got both.
Yeah.
We live in a broken world. And sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Mm.
So we gave them the reality of both. There's good in our world, but there can also be bad.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't like everything is all sweet because home is like, when we say home is where the heart is, it's where when you bring the heart home, we just take that heart and we massage it back and we nurture it back. But also the reality that life can be tough out there.
Yeah.
Was another value that we gave them and for them to know that not everybody's going to like you and that's okay, you know, and
it's hard. It was hard for me to accept though.
At the time.
Yeah.
So that was another value
yeah,
that we gave them. Yeah.
What, and you now, like, obviously, you're an adult, Sinead, and
nearly
all of that. Yeah,
you are an adult. You're welcome.
You're just being reminded by your mom now who you are. What are some of the other things, Sinead, that are really to you now are still such a core value to you, because you can see clearly that your mom has instilled that into you?
I think serving people is a big, being a servant. So, like, being a, like, leader servant, I don't know the term they use these days, but to be
servant leader.
Yeah, servant leader, there you go. To be master of all is to be servant of all. So always serving people, what can I bring rather than what can I take? So we used to, before church, my dad would say, tomorrow is a working day for our family. Mm-hmm. We are working, like we, so Sunday was a working day. Mm-hmm. And it's just that you're not just going to take.
Yeah.
But in serving, I found my calling, like I found my passion for young people, for advocating for people. Mm-hmm. So I already saw the benefits of going in to serve. Mm. So it wasn't like, oh, we've got to go to church. It was like, oh, I have a place here, like people, expecting things of me. That really helped me when I was younger. And I think excellence as well. Mm-hmm. So
what did that look like? Excellence in, like, your attitude or the way you do your work, or
definitely attitude, even that, not having a stinking attitude, having a good attitude when no one's watching. Mm. What are you like when no one's watching? That was a big thing in our house. Like, your attitude determines your altitude. Your attitude. So it was always,
I love,
like,
the affirmations coming out of the Bamford household.
Yeah, and forgiveness as well. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot. Being in ministry with my parents, I've seen a lot. I've seen people come into our lives. Sometimes you do a lot for someone. And they leave. Oh my gosh. They just accept it. My dad used to say, when people come into your life, treat them well. When they want to go, when they want to go, let them go. And that was hard. But the more I saw them do it, they kept doing it. Another person will come, they'll leave. Yeah. They kept doing it. It taught me that there's your love can't run out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Was that really intentional, Jane?
Yes, that was hard. But I also live with a man of grace. My husband is obviously he's not perfect, but he's so gracious. Mm. And when I met him, he's a big guy and 6'1". And when you say, Kofi, I'm not happy with you, he would say, my heart is so big, I can't hold anybody in there. Right. And he'd make such a joke out of things. So you let things go. Mm. So by being even funny about it, he taught me, and we taught the girls, we taught Sinead and Siobhan how to let it go.
Yeah.
And I think I shared this in church recently, because I was teaching on something and it came up. My husband had cancer 2 years, during COVID actually, he had cancer. Nobody knew because his brother was dying of COVID. So we couldn't share it because his mother was 92 and it would break, she would die if she heard that both sons. And when my husband had his cancer surgery, the day of the surgery, I was working, I was still seeing clients. I couldn't even take, I took him to hospital, I couldn't go in. And when he came round from the anesthetic, he didn't call me. I was calling the hospital because I hadn't heard. My husband texts somebody in our church who was also having surgery. They didn't know he was also in hospital.
Right.
And this individual walked out of his life and never said goodbye. And he was like, it's okay, Jane. At least I did what I was supposed to do for her. So I think when the girls were home and they were younger, they saw some of that. Because when you're a pastor and you're a pastor's wife and you're a pastor's daughter, you can't leave your church.
No, you can't.
Everybody else can get upset.
Yeah.
And so you stay. And so we didn't get tough.
Yeah.
We just keep learning. And we're still learning how to forgive. You know, I speak a lot of things to myself about love. You know, even when my husband upsets me, I'll keep saying, okay, I'm loved unconditionally by God. I would say it. I work out my emotions until I put them away.
Yeah.
Literally what I teach my clients, I tell them, I do this for myself, you know, for my well-being as well. So so those are the things that were tough.
But
you've seen the benefits also, Sinead,
the benefits,
of forgiveness. It's incredible.
If even just keeping your heart flowing freely, it's amazing because you have the capacity to, again, to keep love. It's like it strengthens you. I mean, it takes strength to love, but it shows you that, wow, this love that Christ talks about, you know, the spiritual love, it is, it's literally an agape. It's not humanly possible. It's not humanly possible, but it shows you we're capable of it. I'm not where they are, because I would have slapped some people. I'm not there, but I've seen it done, so I know it's possible.
Yeah.
And so I don't have an excuse, so to speak. But yeah, it's not I'm not rushing to.
And obviously, you've been raised like in a Christian household, but your mom's Christian as well. But like, at what point for you was that not just like your value system and your culture, but it was like, oh, this is now my choice?
Yeah.
Because obviously, you can be raised in a house where there's really firm values and there's a certain way of living, and we have to adhere to it when we're in the household for the most part, when we're kids.
Yeah.
But was the kind of a point where that switched for you from just being, okay, this is my mom or my dad, to like, oh, this is a choice for me personally?
It's such a good question, because it's a very important thing that everyone must do. And a lot of people say, oh, pray for me, or like my mother's prayers. But you need to make that decision. And I think when I was 14, I started to question certain things, certain principles we're being taught. And I wanted to know the answer for myself. Because also sometimes you don't want to hear your parents talk anymore. You're like, ah, like, shut up, like, kind of thing. Like, dating is for marriage and blah, blah. You're like, oh, please. So I thought, let me find out the answer to my question and see if there's not like a screen, like someone hiding. And that desire to know for myself, I formed my own relationship with God from 14. And then we went on a missions trip when I was 17 to Ghana, I think. And again, it's not your parents' church, so no one can fake it. Like, it's not like, oh, I know this. I walked into this church one day and there was kids like worshipping God, like children, and no one had compelled them. And I thought, children are having a free, they don't need to fake it. And they're having this free expression. I was like, God is real. I was like, oh my gosh, like God is like, you can reach out almost and touch him. And that was what I decided. I will serve God. Like, there was one thing where I'm a Christian, but I was like, oh, now I'm actually going to serve God, because if this is what he's given out, like, I want to be part of what he's doing. So that was quite a pit. I remember that day very clearly. So
beautiful.
Like,
you were saying before, Jane, just coming back to what you were saying earlier about, like, when there's conflict in your relationship, that you talk about it. But clearly, you must have built that as, like, a way, like a method of being from Sinead being young. Like, what have you learned about, like, fighting fair? Because sometimes, okay, because I'm all up for a conversation, but sometimes when you're angry, it's like, it's not just like, let's sit down and take our turn and say what we need to say. How have you kind of developed a bit of a...
practice, I think. I mean, recently we had a family thing. And because it involves other people, I won't talk about the details. But Sinead came home and we asked her to come home, and she came to our house. And my husband told her the pieces of the story. And then she said, she turned to me because we were at the dining table talking. And she said, Mom, do you know about this? You know, in this stern face, you know, like I'm in court, you know.
My lawyer mode.
Yeah, interrogating.
The lawyer voice.
Mother of... And I said, yes. And then she turned to me and she said, Mom, you've changed.
Yeah.
And because that kind, the news that we're dealing with, Rachel, I would have... emotionally, I would have gone ballistic. All my emotions, I mean, I would be all over the place. And so, but over the years, I'd learned to feel my emotions. I feel the hurt and the anger and rein it in a little bit and not let it run away from me. And but it wasn't that she saw sometimes me being emotionally having the outburst.
She threw slippers at me once.
I was so upset.
Like chasing me out of the house.
So she knew I could be, but so she had seen me progressively tempering that, and then she looked at me in the eye and she says, "Mother, you've changed." And to me, I just said, "I thank God."
Yeah,
I'm not arrived, but still working on that. That would feel my emotions, but you know, I would not let them run away from me like that. Yeah. I mean, at what point you're going to behave like the 30-year-old self that I've gone through my 40s, my 50s, and I'm going to my 60s, and I'm still this grouchy old woman? No, I don't want to be. I don't want to be that woman.
Do you feel you've learned a lot from even just seeing that in your mom as an adult, like change from like maybe just being a bit emotionally led, let's say, with slippers, to like being able to have more of a measured response? Because like you say, you've kind of had a chance to like feel your emotions, chew over your emotions. Done. I love what you said, Jane, about them just putting them away. Do you feel like you've seen that change in your mum? Do you think that's helped you, or are you just like still working on it?
I'm working on it. I think there was a lot of books in her office that would be like, control your, like just these titles, like how to deal with your anger, like rah, like these, like, the therapist books are hilarious, like, oh, is sex good for you? Like things like that. So I'd actually think, is she reading these books and therefore like she must be working on herself. So sometimes I'd be so angry with her and I'd like go into her like study thing and I'd see like how to be a nice person or like these really weird like stop adultery or just things like that. You just, there's all sorts of books that she reads. So I'd think, oh yeah, she's like gonna be better. Because there's times where your parents make you so angry. And I think I need to humble myself, because she's also still working. I think, I don't know, it's your profession, or I think it's also your really your character, but you're working, always wanting to learn, always wanting to learn. I think that I've had to learn that, keep learning. You can learn from anyone. You can even learn what not to do, but you must keep learning. And sometimes I don't want to learn anymore. Like I didn't like school. I like playing, I like having fun. So just that commitment to I must learn and keep learning. I see you do that. And I think I've taken that. I've taken it on. It's not my natural way. But I've taken that from you, definitely.
I saw this thing recently and it was like, I don't know if it's like a line or somebody said it as a quote, but it was all around like when you've had a really great parental experience, so like you've got a really close relationship, there can be the danger of seeing your parents as superheroes. And then when you get a little bit older and as an adult, you see some of the flaws, it's like, oh, they're not everything that I thought they were. And then I think there's a tendency, like then as the daughter, to be like, oh, my mum didn't do this for me, or they were this way and I thought they were this, and almost like a blaming for lots of things. But then I saw this thing and it kind of said, trying to understand, it reminded me when you said this, Sinead, like that your parents are growing up and learning, even as you're growing and learning, and that extending a bit of like mercy to them, that because we think they've finished our school. When we're kids, we're just like, they're perfect, they do everything right, they're great, when you've had a good relationship of a parent. It's a bit of a deep question, but like you've obviously, your mum's, you are amazing, Jane. Like I said, I would love it if you adopted me too, but you've obviously had a great relationship, but that can cause you to think, oh, my parents are perfect. Like, have you had to reconcile a bit you've got older?
I didn't realise my dad was a human, a person for a long time. I couldn't, it's only when he wasn't well and he didn't even show signs of it. So I couldn't process he is a man for a long time. I think with us, we're a bit more like if I push her, she's pushed me. So like I know she's a woman. Like I started to see like, oh, you are a strong woman, like sort of thing. But with I think my dad especially, he, even when he's preaching, he's my pastor and my father. So I see him in a different light. So even the thought of him not being well, first of all, we couldn't tell anyone, but it's, I couldn't humanize him for a while. It took me a long time to process what was happening to to him. And it affected me because I shut down a lot.
Yeah.
I put it away in a box somewhere. I just put it away. Whereas, and then I see people talking about it like, oh, my parents not well, or my dad. And I just think, yeah, I'm not going to say it. Like, my dad's not well, but I'm not going to say anything because that's not my, he can't not be well. So I think that was hard because so many people look to him as a father figure, as a head of the church, as this. So I don't want to put him in, do you know what I mean? Just in a human body. And it's, I'm still like doing that, but it's, yeah, it's been a process. It's been a process of, yeah, making him human. So yeah, yeah.
So in my own relationship with my mother, I mean, I said earlier on about my mother, my parents were divorced. My mother said to me that she didn't listen to her own mother about my father. She said to me, her mother told her, because my father was an alcoholic, and my mother said that her mother said to her, don't marry him. Because he was drinking a lot at the time they were dating. And my father told my mother, I will change when we get married. And my mother said to me, don't listen to a man or anyone who tells you they will change afterwards. So she began to share certain things with me, which I in turn shared with Sinead and my other daughter about dating. You know, so I took some of those things. But then I also said to my mother, well, Mama, if you had not married him, I wouldn't be here. So even though you didn't listen, we came along. But when I was being bullied at school and I told my mother and she came to the school because I was really bugging her. I love school and I shut down for 2 years. And she came to the school and my headmistress said, oh, Jane is thriving. I mean, in those days, I don't think they knew what to do with bullying. Right. They didn't take it seriously. And one night it became too much for me. And I just asked people in my dormitory, do you have paracetamol, have a headache? Do you have this? I took a cocktail of whatever I could find and to kill myself because I had it. And over the years, as I went back to study to become a therapist, lots of times people have said to me when I wrote my story or worked through my story, they would say that that was your greatest pain as we listened to your story. And yet that has become, out of that has come your work also, especially with young people. I have a very tender heart towards young people. I hold their hearts very carefully when they come into my practice or when they cross my path. And so I had the choice, Rachel, of really like turning on my mother because it almost ruined my life. But at the same time also, I somehow got a hold of all the things that my mother did well. I love reading. My mother, I lived in Ghana at the time growing up. My mother ordered books from England that she thought I would like, you know, Enid Blyton books that have stories in there of weather situations. And she encouraged that. You know, I love Shakespeare. She bought me books to help me to grow in the academic giftings. But emotionally, she didn't know how to minister to me, how to reach into that. So I had to let that go and reach for the things that she did well for me. So there's a sense of, I call it responsibility and forgiveness. I had to forgive my mother and grieve the things I didn't get and then take responsibility that from now on, Jane, you're going to be take ownership of yourself. You're going to be confident. You're not going to be afraid because I was bullied by my own year group. So I was terrified of women for a long time, you know, and interestingly, I work a lot with women now, you know, but so that was where I felt that my mother failed me. But at the same time, my mother also was an amazing woman. She loved the Lord. She was a good Christian woman. And my grandmother was a Christian. So I always say to Sinead, I've had two generations of women who did the best they could to embody something to me. They owned their vulnerabilities, the things that she didn't do well. And my grandmother was the same. My grandmother was incredible. She was a big pillar in my life before she died. So when I pray, I would say that, like, I would say, I pray to the God of my grandmother, of grandmother Sarah, my mother Emilia, and now who is now my God and is now your God. So that's the good things that came out of that. Yeah.
It's amazing. And you, like, obviously as a mom now, I know you're in a different season of life. You're about to become Yaya, grandma. Yeah. Like, Sinead's not pregnant. Sorry, just to clarify.
This is
your other daughter.
Yes.
And I think, like, becoming a mom, becoming, like, Yaya, it makes you think about your experience. And clearly you've done a lot of work on that. But I suppose there's this thing, and I'm a mom too, so and I've got young children, but I think about this a lot, that I sometimes struggle to think, I'm going to get things wrong with my kids, and I already know, but I'm like, but I don't want to, but I want to be perfect, but I want to get everything right. But just in our humanity, I guess we have to accept we get things wrong. I was like, how have you handled that, just being a mom? And has that been in later? Did you just accept that from day one? I'm going to get some things wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help me then, because I'm like...
The recovering perfectionist thing, because she's a perfectionist. I don't...
Recovering perfectionist.
I'm not much of a perfectionist.
No.
So
I feel like it's that recovering perfectionist.
Yes, recovering.
Yeah.
Perfectionism comes from not feeling good enough. So you strive. So when I understood where that was coming from, then I had to begin to make changes. And even when they were teenagers, one day my husband said to me, he says, Jane, you can't just keep barging into their rooms, you know. We're living with, like, they're almost adults. And I went, oh, okay. That was not nice. And I had to think, I had to say, okay, girls, I'm so sorry that we stopped the barging in. Or I stopped the barging in. It wasn't, that is too much, too nice. He's so laid back. But my husband also was very helpful, you know, and that's why Sinead says that I apologize a lot. But I am truly sorry for the things that I don't know that I make a mistake.
Yeah.
The reason is because I want to grow. Mm. Apart from the fact that I've gone into a lot of therapy as a therapist, it wasn't because of being a therapist and going to therapy. I wanted to grow, and I'm still growing. I want to grow, and I have this joke I say in my church. I don't want to be a grandmother or an old woman. And when my children say, let's go to Grandma Jane's house or Yaya's house, they go, I don't want to go. She's a grouchy old woman. She's always angry. I don't want to be an angry old woman.
Yeah.
I want to be sweet.
And what was it like? Like, obviously, Sinead, you're 32.
I'm always in denial. 32.
You're 32. Yeah. So, obviously, Sinead was a point living in your house and obviously, like, living to the values of your household and everything, Jane. But as a mom, obviously, there's a point where children go beyond the teenage years, start to grow up, maybe go to university and study and just make choices for themselves about relationships. And like, what was that like for you? Because I think even as like a really gracious person, that's a big change from being like the nurturing, the like, the I can tell you what to do and you have to do it, to like, this is a person with their own agency and they can make their own decisions. What was that like for you? And Sinead, I'd like to know as well.
Yes.
What was that like?
I've got a story for you.
You got a story. Oh, Rachel's gone to Meadowland. Yeah. So Sinead dated a few idiots. And if they're listening, they might not be listening, because even... They went and she didn't listen. Yeah. That was some of my places of conflict with her. You know, and one particular guy, and the reason was because he was so in love with the idea of Sinead. And it was so obvious, except to her. And she wouldn't listen. And so then you just back off. So I was so upset, but I had to just back off and let her, you know, and my husband said, okay, just leave it. You know, he didn't like him either. And another idiot before that as well. but thank God the idiots all went and we have our lovely Benjamin. But you have sometimes, not always, you have to go through a few idiots.
Yeah.
You know, before you get to that, you know.
And what about career? Because I know you're a lawyer.
Yes.
But was that what you did from day one? Did you study law at university straight away?
I studied politics. Mm-hmm. So they always... it sounds corny, but be whatever you want to be, but just be good at what you're doing. Like, be good. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the doctor lawyer thingy, but I think they were concerned because it was, I'm going to be an actress. I'm going to be a painter. I'm going to be
a vet.
I'm going to be a vet.
I'm going to be a police woman.
It was broad. And then I was like, I'm going to be a dancer. I'm going to be a dancer now. Right. And so it was more of, they were saying, what is your purpose? So what is your why? That's what was a lot in our house, like, your why. And I thought, oh, dancing is fun, but I don't think I'm getting the fulfillment of serving people that I get at church. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll go down this law route. And they were really surprised, actually. They thought I would go down more, I don't know what you thought I would do, maybe performing arts or something like that.
Performing arts,
And they just sort of said, okay, you like go for the law thing. But even though they weren't lawyers, every time they would always say, how can we help you get there? Or just in my confidence, because I had to, there's so many hurdles that I had to pass. I failed the bar. And initially, I kept, and it's amazing because I got to come home and be like, I failed. My dad was like, okay, take it again. So a lot of people don't have that where they can't fail. So, you know, I had that cushion, almost safety net. But I remember my dad sat me down one time and challenged me and said, do you really want to do this? Because it's costing you financially. It's, he kept saying, do you want to do this? And we always got into an argument, but I think he was trying to say, like, is this what you really want to do, or you're doing it for other people, to impress other people and things like that? So I'm grateful that they challenged me, but they always said, whatever you want to do, we'll support you. You know, if you want to live in our house, I was planning to live in the house forever. I'm not one of those people that wanted to move out. Right. I never wanted to move out. I still take food from her fridge. I never wanted to move out. I could have moved Ben into their house, but he wouldn't let me. So I never wanted to leave their house. So I think maybe, I don't know if that's a bad thing, but I was always given that warmth that you don't have to leave. It's not time to go. But with the relationships aspect, because they taught so much on relationships and they have this marriage that is, they're very much in love, to be honest, but yuck, but like it is what it is. like they kiss and all that stuff. Yeah. And I think there was a desire to want a relationship like that. And so you want to model that, but you're trying to model it with the wrong people and you just have to sometimes just wait for your time. And I think I wanted to model that, but it wasn't translating in the people. Oh my gosh. In the people I was dating. But I had to make the decision for myself. That's one thing I said, that I have to know if I can hear God's voice for myself or as if this Jane Bountiful's voice in my head that I don't like him, because her voice is always in my head. So I was like, I need to know I can hear God for myself. So even if I crash the play, I know I crashed it and God and I will get out together, because I had to own it for myself. So it was hard because she would be talking about my great grandmother and she'd be like, your grandmother will be so sad. And I'd just say, oh gosh. But I had to learn to hear his voice on my own. And you did back off, actually, eventually.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And gave me the room to make the decisions. But it was a journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got there.
Yeah.
You did. Yeah. And as we get older as well, I'm just thinking about just in general mother and daughter relationships where they've been healthy.
Yeah.
Your mum is like a mum to you for a time, and then I guess there can be a period where you're a bit more like friends or peers, maybe not to that level, but I guess like it changes from being instructed and disciplined and told what to do and championed and encouraged. Yeah. That still goes on, but you're an adult. Like I say, you make your own decisions. But I think, and maybe it's not just me, I don't think it's just me, that there can be a bit of a time when you're an adult and there are times where you actually need your mum to be a mum to you again, like you were when you were younger. Like, have you had any experience of that? Because think some parents can be like, right, I've raised you and that you're great and now we're friends. And I think there's still, I've experienced as an adult certain times where I've thought, I now need my mum, you know, as a 35-year-old woman, I need my mum to be a mum to me just for this time or for this moment.
Yeah,
definitely. Like, I need her more now.
Yeah.
In a different way, but I need her, definitely. Don't get emotional, but... Just even with dealing with my mental space and decision-making, I think sometimes I feel very overwhelmed and I'll call her and she'll be like, have you done your breathing exercises? Like, breathe, like, through the nose or whatever. And then she'll say, you know, I think you're feeling, you're doing this. Because she knows me, and so it's so nice to have somebody who understands the way your brain works mm-hmm. and knows you mm-hmm. And just brings me down. But she's done well at like also not overstepping.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, that's what yeah. I was going to ask.
I thought you'd be like a bit much. Because like when we first moved into our house, she's like, I've got your coasters, I've got your soap dish. Oh, and you're going to have these lovely like drapes. And I just thought, oh, here
we go.
I
didn't call you for 1 month when you got married.
Did you?
You talk about that. And then you called me one day.
You say a month, but yeah, it's probably a day
her.
To you.
I didn't call her because a friend of yeah. mine said to me, don't, back off.
Right.
So I didn't, you know, no, I didn't call. And then one day she called. She said, Mommy, you don't call me anymore.
Yeah.
Then we started again. Yes. But I was giving her space. And it was very difficult for me to not talk to her. But I was giving her that space to just find her own feet in her own relationship. Yeah. In that sense. And I didn't call for a while. Do you remember? Yeah.
But then you came with the food and after all of that.
Yeah. Then they needed the food. But I told, I said to them when they got married, but they love my food. They still do. But I said, I will not bring food. I will only bring food when you ask me.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that, it's that boundary.
Boundaries. Yes. Yeah. We're big on boundaries. Yeah.
I won't until you ask me, Mom, we need support, you know, whatever, you know, and then I would bring food or whatever. Yeah, definitely.
Another question I had, because you're actually so alike in so many ways in terms of your values. We know we talked about the humour. We know it stayed locked in, Jane, for a few years, but we know it's always been in there. But you're obviously, you're both from different generations. Yeah. And I'm just always interested again, even in family of origin and family lines, like we can be so like our family, but then the generational thing makes a huge difference. So like, what are some of the really key differences, either in your worldview or the way you interpret things or see things?
Gosh.
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
So this Sinead's generation, call me the manager. I know my rights. Yeah. Very outspoken. You know, and in the way that they have no long-term commitment to anything. And so they don't understand why we eat in the same Chinese restaurant, even though sometimes they're so rude to us.
Yeah,
like, generation, call me the manager. Right. Is anybody here? Is the boss here? You know, so there's that side of that generation where they know their rights and they're so open. And we are like more patient and we take a bit more bad service for a while before we speak up. And then the generation also that if you don't have their attention, like even in when we talk about sermons and things like that, even in church, they will be like, oh, this topic, just the titles of our sermons, they don't even understand. They don't even get it. Mm. And we've had to become intentional about how we language, you know. But having her on board also helps us. But my husband gets very exasperated. I am not changing for them. And then eventually he will.
Yeah.
Because also you want to travel with them and pass the baton.
Yeah.
And you can't pass the baton until you travel with somebody.
Yeah.
So the way they don't have long-term commitments. It's very different from my generation. I go to the same dry cleaners for over 20-something years till he closed down.
Yeah.
Never mind that he spoiled my dress. Things went wrong.
You're still going back.
That allegiance. And they won't take that, you know. And then the attention span just is shocking. Of an intelligent generation, but with a small attention span.
Yeah.
If it doesn't grab them the first minute. Oh, Mommy, don't write long chapters for your book. You know, nobody reads that long. Wow. I loved my library when I was growing up, you know. But anyway.
Oh my gosh. I think vulnerability is a big thing.
Mm.
Just even sometimes the openness, you've been nervous with me, like you're so open, but you're quite open. You're very open, but I think the level of vulnerability, maybe not from, but other family members, they'll say, oh, I've been through so much. They'll never say what it is. So their children are sometimes so angry with them, but they will never have a conversation. And they're like, oh, you don't understand. Oh, you don't. And they will just say, I've had to struggle, but they'll never define it. So it's these ambiguous experiences that their children can't relate to. And I see it over and over again with some people my age that they haven't had that open conversation about why their parents, you know, didn't stay together, or just the simple answer is never said. And I think it is a level of protection that you have. You protect a lot of people. Even Siobhan and I, growing up in the house with you, they would switch languages when we come downstairs because they wanted to protect people. Yeah. And then Siobhan is very good with language. So over time, she'll say, oh, that person in church is leaving or whatever. How do you know? How do you know? So she could translate, but I couldn't. And I think, why are you now telling me this now? Mm. But they always want to really protect. Whereas I think we're a bit more open book, you know, this is what it is. I think there's balance with both. There has to be balance, but both are important. I think it's important to be vulnerable. But I think it's also some things, again, it's boundaries and who you share them
who
with.
Who you do that with.
So, yeah, and I think relationships as well. I went just, not in just a romantic way, but friendships. People tend to drop people a lot these days. And you have the same friends. I see that. Maybe you all came over together. I don't, but same boat. Yeah, I don't know. There was a boat, but they have the same friends. But we live in a different world where one of my best friends lives in Malaysia. That's just what it is.
It's
you know,
just geography. It's like just you don't live near each other.
Exactly. So I think them understanding that we're pulled in so many directions. I mean, even just when you want to order food, there's so many options. Options are a good thing sometimes.
So is it you hitting on the Chinese restaurant?
Yeah. They're so rude. Anyway, they're like, no, you didn't order that. And they're just, anyway, I won't even, you need to stop going there. But
we stopped. No.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Okay.
Come on, this is progress.
It's progress.
Yes. So
we learn off each other.
I should name and shame that. See, that's what I would do.
Yeah, that's the generation.
I should name and shame that Chinese restaurant, but I won't because you're here, but I would.
Yeah.
Terrible food. Terrible service. Anyway,
well, I would love to do an audience dilemma with you both. So, as you know, as Magnify, we're a community of women as well, and you know, a lot of people have like great relationships with the mom. Some people perhaps don't even have a relationship with the mom. So, I want us to read one of the dilemmas, or maybe we should do more than one. So, to one or both of you, we'll ask these questions. So, it says this: I have to start off by saying how much I love my mom and how much I respect her for raising me and my siblings as a single mother for most of my life. My dad left when I was little, and she didn't have much support from other people. I completely understand how hard she had to work and how many sacrifices she had to make just to keep us all together and having a healthy upbringing. A lot of my relationship with my mom, I felt more like friends instead of a mother-daughter dynamic. And I'm increasingly understanding that that hasn't had a positive impact on myself. I'm the firstborn. I always want to be there for my mom, but I often feel quite emotionally drained by having to be the figure in the family that has to deal with all the heavy stuff. I feel good that she feels comfortable enough to share her hardships with me, but at the same time, it can be really overwhelming. Sometimes I don't feel like I was given the space to be a child in our dynamic, and this has continued well into adulthood. I really don't want to upset her, but I think I need to have some boundaries. Do you have any wisdom on that?
Boundaries will be good because Sinead and I can be friendly towards each other, but she's not my friend. in a good way. Yeah, she's not. Yeah. My friend lives, I have a best friend that I talk to, that I pray with, that we are friendly, we've done shopping together, you know, and all of that, but she's not my friend. So that boundary is so important. But the mother-daughter relationship is one that sometimes also psychologically has been studied from a historical point of view, as that repeated patterns happen where a lot of women don't communicate their needs. There is a thing about women advocating for themselves. So generally, women don't.
They don't, yeah.
So sometimes our mothers didn't speak up, then they also then don't raise daughters who don't speak up. So this person probably now is up to here with that and needs to speak up about her needs and that it's okay. When you give too much of your problems to your children, we call them a parentified child, a child who has become a parent. And it's unfair. But we don't realize that because sometimes it comes through the generations where you see a pattern of a mother and grandmother who never advocated or spoke their needs, that I need this, I need space, I need that. I mean, these are things that were not in my own culture growing up. I've had to learn them and study them and speak up about them and not feel guilty. So I agree with her. She needs to speak up and say, Mommy, I love you, but I need to time for myself. Mommy, I have needed you, you know, to have that, what I call the honest, hard conversations, the heal relationships. We've had them where we've spoken about, you know, the language, the way we language those conversations is so important. Now, Mommy, I needed you and I need you sometimes to just be there for me, to put your hand on my hand and say it's going to be okay. So she needs to find her voice, language her needs.
I think it's important to not see confrontation as a negative thing. I think a lot of us want to always be respectful, so respectful that you're actually having resentment for a person that you love and that you think it's you're honouring your parent by not saying anything, but inside your feelings towards them are not positive. So I think it's really important not to see confrontation as a negative thing. There's good confrontation. I think it's also, though, learning when to say something and how to say it, because you know your mother more than anybody else. And I think if I tell my mom something when she's like in her cookie mode and she's got a sharp knife in her hand and it could go left very quickly. But you know, you know the person, you have enough wisdom to say, I will approach them this way. But so many of us, we bring up a thing in the heat of the moment and then even more words are released that we're never supposed to.
Yeah, you can't take them
back. And I think you've got to look at what is the ultimate goal here. The goal here is to reclaim, you're my mum, I'm the daughter. Therefore, we need it to have this conversation in that environment, not when you're fighting. So I think if you really want to resolve that, you have to look for an opportunity. And I always say, pray for the best opportunity to say something. I really used to struggle with, even with people in church, because it's like a family, telling someone, oh, like, you know, I don't like the way you said that. But I always pray for the opportunity. And sometimes people will they'll come to me and say, oh, you know, so I always pray about that. Always pray, how can I bring this up best, you know, so it comes out with the best outcome. So,
so practical, lots of wisdom. Second one, and we'll just read this and then get your thoughts on it as well. So me and my mum are like twins in more ways than just physical. We share so many of the same mannerisms and we both have a very fiery spirit that means we can both get very passionate. I'm feeling that we're relating to this in many different areas of our lives. While I'm glad that I inherited an intense zeal for things and a zest for life, well, that's the one way of putting it, it means that we often clash because our personalities are the same. In our dynamic, there feels like there is little room for understanding one another because neither of us will back down. And she really struggles with admitting when she was wrong and sees apologizing as a sign of weakness. Some of the way that she is might be cultural or generational, but I think her lack of admitting when she's in the wrong has really put a strain on our relationship in recent years, and I want to see things get better. How can I help her see the error in her ways that doesn't feel confrontational? I want to hold myself accountable, but it's always hard to do when I'm seen as the villain.
One good way when you are going to confront somebody, sometimes I like to even use the word, I want us to address some issues in our relationship.
So it's changing the language.
How you language it. And never say, you make me, you do this. When it makes the other person defensive and it kicks into all their fears of rejection or whatever they've done wrong. So always it's good to language from a place of, I feel when we do this, it makes me feel this way, Mommy. And I treasure our relationship and want to grow it. So it's I feel the feeling word about the situation, how you language it. This person needs to address this thing with their mother, because as I'm hearing the question, the goal or the motive for addressing it is because they want a better relationship. So the goal has to be brought forward when they're communicating to their mother. I desire for our relationship to be stronger, to be richer. That's why I want us to have this conversation, that when you I feel when you do this and that. And so you say, I. So that's
how. You're not saying like you make me feel this way.
But also putting the motive why we're having this conversation. I'm having this because I value, I cherish the relationship we have and I want to make it better.
Yeah. I think even when she was saying the error of her ways, I think it's very easy to spot everything wrong with another person. And I think any conversation I go into, even if I know I'm right and I know I am, I always think of something I can say as a, I know I don't do this well because it disarms
your own failures. Exactly,
always, because you're the villain in somebody's story, so you have to accept. So I just think of like, oh, I don't really think this is true, but I'm going to say this to disarm this situation. So I'll say, I know I'm very, like, I speak quite directly and that is not helpful. So, and then I think that that vulnerability opens the
like
other,
softens, brings a barrier down.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's always just a way to bring, bring the barrier down and let the person know you can have the ability to self-analyze because people get really angry when you can't see them yourself. And so I think it's really important to have something that you're ready to admit to because a relationship is two ways. It's two ways. It's not one way. So,
absolutely. And then lastly, you know, we it'd be great to hear like where we can find you online or is there any way that we can support the work that you're doing at the minute as a community?
We've got a lot going on.
I've got a lot going on.
We are going, you've got Rwanda. We're going to the missions trip again this year. You want to talk about
it? So that's, setting up the, that's where you're setting up the counselling
centre. Obviously, Rwanda had a genocide. This year is 30 years ago. And I've been going to Rwanda for over 15 years. I have a project there that's registered called the Imhoza, which means comforter. You know, God spoke to me that he had comforted me a lot in my pain of trying to, especially when I tried to kill myself at 14 and bring me, brought me so much comfort and strength. And it's very biblical also that the same comfort and strength that you have, you go and strengthen others. And so there are lots of people who have not had access to therapy and counseling and who never will. So the Imhoza project just gives that. It's training, first of all, I'm training nationals in simple care and counseling skills so they can advocate for themselves. So that's one project that I'm very close to my heart as well. But you can find me on my Instagram.
It's at Dr. Jane.
At Dr. Jane Banfor. You know.
I know it's Dr. Jane Banfor. Yeah. And then I'm at The Preacher's Daughter. And we have the Purpose Program, which I run every quarter. It's just for helping people find their purpose, their God-given purpose. It's done in a group, so it's really something I love doing. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to the next one. So,
well, Sinead and Jane, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for inviting us. We love it.
You're funny.
You are funny. You are funny.
Ooh, I didn't think I was going to cry in that episode. I would love like this kind of relationship.
But you are building. You're building that already, Rachel, without realizing it, because you know I always wondered. A part of me always wondered. I hope my daughters make it in their own, in their lifetime, in their world as they grow older. I hope they don't suffer like I did. You know, because I went through a lot as a teenager. I found myself at 30 and I said to Sinead, nobody needs to find themselves at 30. It's wrong. That's why I'm so passionate about young people. So then when she got married and as I began to talk to her, I talked to Siobhan, I see them handling their homes. They're finding their own way. It's not always like my way. And that was such a relief and a release that, oh, you don't have to do it perfectly. Just like the British psychoanalyst Donald Winnicott said, children need, Rachel, just the good enough mother. The good enough mother is not perfect. She just does the best she can every day. And she creates a holding environment where her children can bring any distress. And even though it distresses her, she's not overwhelmed by it. She just holds it in and makes them feel safe with imperfection and just accepts them. And by just every day doing that little that every mother can, you create that. And that's what I have learned as my daughters have become adults, that, oh, I didn't do everything perfectly. I made mistakes. I didn't get it right. You know, I didn't even have all the books that this generation have. But every day, you're going to wake up as a mom and do the best you can. That's my definition of excellence. Do the best you can with what you have at wherever you are at. And that will help your
children. It just got me. Yeah. And then also when you, I didn't expect to cry, but when you were saying about your mom and your dad and their, like when people come into your life and they walk away and you able to let them go, I was just like, it just got me somewhere.
Yeah.
And I just thought the beauty of that and your, even in your relationship, just how you've learned that growing up just in a house where you've seen that, I think is, you know, that like learning by osmosis as well.
Yeah.
Even when you don't really agree with it always, and you just think like, I'm gonna cause a scene, which is also my go-to if we're being honest. And I'm learning, I'm growing. But I think like, I just love that. I just think that's so beautiful. And I think in your relationship, but I think it's just amazing to think of it in different relationships that you can witness like forgiveness and see that actually release you.
Yeah.
Because we see things just end so badly and so bitterly most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like to see that, even though that was hard for you, Sinead, because you're just like,
someone's like, do you think someone's taking the mick out of your, and my dad is not a small man. He's like 6'6", big man. Mm. Dad, just go and slap this man. Like, go fight back, and you'll hear him sending money to people that have clearly conned you. And I think, what is this? It's the word meekness that he likes to use, that meekness is strength under control.
And also teachable while being taught.
Yeah.
Right.
And but to see him with the physicality of someone that could do something and choose love and always say, the love of God restrains me, Sinead. The love of God, he always say that it restrains, it holds me. And I think this guy is actually, it's true. Can I do it? We'll see. But to see it every time, that was the way he went. And you also follow him in that. I'm like, oh gosh, like you're agreeing easily, to this too sort of thing.
Took but, a while.
But God has worked on me because people, you used to teach me, people can't do endings well. It's very hard for people to do endings well. Mm-hmm. And again, the more you see about where people have come from, where they've been broken, you know, they don't have the capacity sometimes to do something. So it's helped me understand grace more. Mm. And I think, it's been something that I've had to really swallow, that what Christ did for me, I can't do. I can't do that for someone else. I can't treat somebody else that way. But to see it lived out in you both, it's helped me. It makes me know that I can do this.
I think the beautiful thing as well is like behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So many like not good things happen behind closed doors, but like to see something good happen behind, I think I just feel inspired and challenged. I was just like, I don't know why I'm crying at this, but there you go.
Just in the home. Yeah. But I'd hear them praying for people. Oh, I'll hear them. And I was like, Siobhan, this person, we're like knocking on our door. Just to see them doing that. It changed my life, honestly. Mm.
I didn't even realise that,
Because we're watching, your children are watching.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the Magnify Conversations. We hope you've enjoyed it and found it really value adding. If you're new to our community, or perhaps you just joined us for the first time today, we have an Instagram. Our handle is at Magnify Collective. You'll be able to find everything you need there to keep up to date with us. Next up, if you have a story that you would like to share on the Magnify Conversations, you can go on our website, magnifycollective.com, and share your story with us. We really look forward to seeing you for next week's episode on Monday.